Maryland sports fans, there's only one sports book in the great state of Maryland with over 50 years experience booking bets and supporting customers. Betfred Sportsbook at Longshots is now open and is the only sports book in Frederick offering cash betting on football, basketball, world soccer, and more. Visit the Betfred Sportsbook at I-270 and MD-85 in Frederick, right next to Longshots off-track betting. Go to BetfredSports.com for more information and your chance to win exclusive merchandise. Must be 21 or older. Play responsibly. For help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey out there, rock and rollers. Welcome to the 37th edition of the Ugly American Werewolf in London Rock Podcast, recorded right here in central London, just off Abbey Road. And after a couple of weeks of reviewing Kiss and their amazing documentary on A&E, Kisstory, Action Jackson and I decided to take a little bit of a detour here. We're going to talk about a band that is huge in the UK, could not be bigger in popular culture or in the zeitgeist of rock music, and that's Oasis. Oasis kind of defined what it was to be British in the mid-90s, kind of led a cultural revolution that was also part political and just an uprising of British youth, feeling positive, feeling good about themselves again. Of course, they were huge all around the world, huge sales in Europe, in the UK, and all parts of the Commonwealth. They also did well in the US, but not quite as well. Like, they're one of the biggest bands of all time in the UK. They're kind of just another good band from the U.S. point of view. And we were slow to adopt them. We were in college in the mid-90s, early mid-90s when they broke. And we were not big fans. You know, Wonderwall and Champagne Supernova may have gotten on the charts. But at that point, we were really into classic rock. And given what was going on around us with like Counting Crows or Hootie and the Blowfish at the time, we thought, well, if it's new, it's not that good. And we're going to ignore it, and we're just going to go delve deeper into the Stones catalog, or you know, wait for Rush to make a new album and then and go see them. So we kind of ignored Oasis the first time around. Luckily, later in life, I found them. And instead of doing one of their huge albums like Be Here Now or What's the Story, Morning Glory, I want to talk about the first album that they made after I had really gotten into them. And that's 2005's Don't Believe the Truth. I think it's at least their second best album ever made. I have to put it behind What's the Story, Morning Glory. But it's an amazing record that kind of diversifies their sound while still sounding very much Oasis. And it was the greatest iteration or lineup of the band ever, because in addition to the Gallagher brothers, Liam on vocals and Noel on guitar, chief songwriter and vocals, they also brought in Gem Archer on guitar. They brought in Andy Bell on the bass. And they had Zach Starkey, who'd spent a lot of time with The Who and other bands, come in and do their recording and then tour with them. So they had this fantastic band with a lot of talent in it, along with Noel's writing. But even though Noel wrote all the songs for the first four albums and loosened up the reins a little bit on the fifth, Heathen Chemistry, on the sixth album, Don't Believe the Truth, he doesn't even write half the songs. And it's an eclectic mix of really cool songs that at a time, 2005, there wasn't a lot of new rock and roll going on. Napster was kind of happening still, so people were stealing music or getting it for free. Rock and roll was dying out, and the music industry was kind of starting to push boy bands, solo singers, girl bands, people they could control from top to bottom and not worry about having to develop as a band or to have issues as the boys in Oasis clearly did over the years. So we're going to dive into that one here today. Now, as usual, we want you to follow us on Twitter at @ugly_werewolf or at @actionjack72. And you can check out all past episodes at www.uglyamericanwerewolf.libsyn.com. And I encourage you to go to feedspot.com, where you can also subscribe to our feed, and it's where they feature us in their top 25 rock podcasts. So for this week, we're going to review the somewhat unknown, certainly in the U.S. unheralded, sixth album of Oasis, Don't Believe the Truth, right here on The Wolf.
Pantheon podcast listeners, Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
So Oasis is a band that really kind of hit it big while we were in college, Jackson, but we totally ignored them, at least I did, because I was of the mindset at the time that if anything new comes out, it automatically sucks. Or, you know, if kids my age like it, it sucks, because they're the ones who are pushing Hootie and the Blowfish up the charts and the Counting Crows and all those bands that at this point in time from America are really kind of afterthoughts, you know, or they weren't that big of a deal in the long scheme of things. I don't know. Is that the way you kind of remember it? Did you ever come to Oasis?
Not really. I mean, I remember hearing Supersonic when it came out on the radio, and I'm like, it's a pretty good track. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like it. The guitar works pretty good in it. They kind of had an attitude that was kind of cool. They were from England. Okay, you know, you're checking some boxes here.
Right.
To me, they kind of, the second record they put out, like with the Champagne Supernova, I was I kind of thought they were more pop. They were big. They were all over MTV. And you're right. I think we were both in the same mindset of if it's new and it's hot on MTV in like the general rotation, we were into the good old stuff, the Stones and right. The Who and everything like that. So the other problem I kind of had with them right off the bat was it seemed like they were always at each other's throats. Like from the beginning, they just could not get along with each other. There was that show that they did, I think, for MTV where Liam was sick.
Right.
And
his voice
so
wasn't
they
up
went
to
on
par.
Without him. And all of a sudden, there's a shot of him in the balcony with a pint. And it's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Drama. There's a lot of drama there. And then I also remember Noel saying something about they asked him, well, you know, what if you guys couldn't make it work, couldn't get together or something? And Noel just said, well, then Wonderwall would have been the first single off my solo record. So it was kind of like, wait, well, these guys they're mean. Mm-hmm. So I had never really, and I think the other problem was too, they really didn't get pushed too hard other than MTV on American radio.
Well, so that's the kind of dynamic I want to explore a little bit here, because Oasis is one of those bands where they don't have huge, huge success on both sides of the pond. They had success in America, yes, but they were just another successful band at that time for Americans. Whereas in the UK, they were a era-defining, generational-defining band. This whole kind of new wave of Britpop, which apparently like Blur, who were, you know, nothing to us, or maybe like the Stone Roses, you know, people like that. They were huge, huge, huge in the UK and kind of throughout Europe and the kind of what I, you know, the UK satellites or the Commonwealth, you know, places like Australia and Canada. They do well around the world, yes, but it's basically in the British colonies for the most part. So yeah, that's something I want to explore, because I was just listening to the new Rock on Tours podcast and they had Joe Elliott of Def Leppard on there. It's a really good one, man. And he, you know, they were kind of talking about how, like, you know, you're a British band and you did a cover album that was really only on British songs, the stuff that influenced you growing up, but you're not nearly as well liked or as big as you are in the United States. In the United States, Def Leppard is huge, you know, and their albums were huge. They're all over MTV. We did a show on Pyromania. We'll do another one on Hysteria, I have no doubt. But over here, they never really got any love. Like, it wasn't until Hysteria that they had like a top 10 song or something like that in the UK, whereas in America they were a big deal. And Oasis was kind of the reverse of that. They could not have been bigger in the UK, but in America, yeah, they were, yeah, okay, I mean, What's the Story, Morning Glory did well, and then, you know, the next one did pretty well, and then, you know, whereas they were Britain's, you know, young lads, you know, kind of pulling together this new British sound and young British identity. They finally got rid of Thatcher after all those years. Finally, young people were starting to feel like they could be something again. It was almost like Oasis was their marching call. They were so much bigger over here than just a pop rock band. They were like, Britain, young people, we're back.
Interesting. Yeah, because we didn't get any of that here. I mean, like you said, they were just another band from England. Yeah, I remember Blur. I remember the Stone Roses also, but like, kind of. I mean, they had a track or two on the radio, but that was it. Yet, but to think that these were like an era-defining band shows you how off we are from the UK. Mm-hmm. Like, you think, oh, you know, it was synced up pretty well. No, apparently not.
Well, and not on everything. And some bands make it because their sound just jibes well with the culture, and some bands don't. And of course, sometimes it comes down to how good or bad your A&R person is. Or how big the record company in England or in Europe, or it might be rest of the world from America, do, you know. But the fact of the matter is, you become big in America, you sell huge numbers of records. Whereas, you know, you become big in England, that's great. I mean, like, I was looking at some sales stuff where it's like they gone, What's the Story, Morning Glory had gone 15 times platinum in the UK. I'm like, oh my God, that's unbelievable. But that's still only, you know, it's not even 5 million copies, whereas it went 6 times platinum in the US. And so they outsold in the US, you know, what they did in the UK by pure numbers, but it's 15 times platinum versus 6 times platinum kind of thing.
Yeah, that is, to your point, the sales figures are not the same. Like, you know, I just think platinum is a million. So if it's 15, you sold 15... Well, no, it's less than that. Then why do you call it platinum then?
Well, that's because, you know, it's a population thing. And, you know, you might say it's not even, I mean, if we have at least 4.5 times the population that the UK does in America, let's call it 5 times to keep the math simple. So if a million for us is platinum, then 1/5 of that should be 200,000 should be platinum for them. And it's actually 300. But whatever. It's a nice distinction. It's for each country, because you can go platinum in Finland by selling like 15,000 copies or something like that, right? I mean, it's not a very big country. So if you sell that many in Finland, you're doing really, really well. But, you know, going, you know, 8 times in Australia is a big deal in Australia, but I mean, you still haven't even sold a million units down there, right? So, but still, I mean, they got off to a huge start. Those first 2-3 albums, with What's the Story, Morning Glory being the big one that had Wonderwall and Champagne Supernova on it. And I guess that's why I didn't like them, because first of all, they had to talk about getting high. You're supposed to do that, like, you know, you're supposed to say, I'm standing next to a mountain. I'm chopping down with the edge of my hand. Like, you know, is that a big pile of cocaine you got there, Jimmy? We don't know. What's he talking about? But it's like, where were you while we were getting high? I'm like, well, that's not real subtle, was it? You know, you're supposed to be, you know, under, you know, and girls like Wonderwall. So I'm like, well, it can't be that good. Right?
And they were kind of doing like the, well, I know in the United States, they kind of got sort of a bad rap because it was like, oh, you're just trying to be the Beatles. You're just trying to, you know, you're trying to sound like that.
That's all we ever heard. Oh, they're ripping off the Beatles.
Correct. Yes. And I think that maybe the things that they were saying too kind of resonated more with people over there than people in the United States. I mean, again, we're all about Taco Bell and driving cars fast over here. So yeah, maybe we just lost it. It just didn't resonate. We didn't have the same connection. But you're right. Wonderwall was huge, and I think Champagne Supernova was also huge on the charts. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think at that point in time, I just kind of said,
"What else is there?" Yes,
it's not hard enough for me. I guess it's not rock enough. It's more pop sounding.
Right. Yeah. And of course, going back to explore that album later, there's some fantastic rock on there. That album is awesome. It's definitely one of my very favorites of the last 30 years, because most of my albums are a lot older than that. But yeah, it's fantastic, not to mention the fact that it's basically a double album when you put together all the B-sides. I mean, they had 6 singles off that record, and they had basically another album worth of B-sides, some of which were hits in their own right, Acquiesce being what is maybe the most incredible B-side of all time, standing up on its own, one that became a hit for them and that, you know, they did until the very end. So that was it's a very fertile time. And it's another thing I like about Oasis is they do have so many B-sides. You don't just get everything on the album. And they have stuff they just released in Japan. They have stuff for the English B-sides. They have stuff for UK, US B-sides. I mean, you have to really dig and search and find all of them. And I've always enjoyed that. Of course, Master Plan is an album you can get that has basically the best of the B-sides to that point. But it was all Noel Gallagher just being able to write these incredible tunes. I mean, I don't think he co-wrote or let anybody else write anything on an album until Heathen Chemistry.
Correct. Yeah, and that's one of the things that I kind of want to get into with Don't Believe the Truth, because he did run the show for a long time. And I think maybe that was something Liam had a problem with, you know, being a employee almost, you know, here's what you're going to sing, here's what you're going to do. So I think that may have added to the tension. And I think part of it was, you know, if Noel could sing, I mean, he can sing, don't get me wrong. I mean, he's got a pretty good voice, but he doesn't have that front man rock star voice. If he had that, and on the flip side, if Liam could write the songs, they would have never gotten together. So they kind of always had that, like, you know, they had that symbiotic relationship that they really needed each other, but I don't think they liked being around each other.
Yeah, and to your point from earlier where they did the TV thing where Liam went in the balcony and started throwing ice and stuff at Noel. He's like, I can't sing, but I'm well enough to be a jackass kind of thing. It was at that point Noel's like, well, I'm going to have to sing some songs because he's going to pull this nonsense. I'm going to be able to do something up there. And so that's kind of how that started. I think Noel's got a killer voice, actually.
Yep.
You're right. It's not what Liam has, that front man booming out kind of thing. And of course, Liam has this odd charisma. I think it's odd. I think some people think it's amazing, but I'm like, you know, you're strutting around. And then when it's Noel's turn to sing, you stand deathly still, like you're waiting for the bus or something like that. Like, you don't grab a tambourine and get the crowd going. You don't go off as maybe a Mick Jagger would while Keith does his songs. You just stand there and kind of stare. It's very odd to me, but it works for him.
It is weird because you're right. Most of those situations like that, the quote-unquote lead singer will do something. Yeah, they'll play, they'll kind of fumble through some chords on the guitar, or they'll grab the tambourine, they'll go away. They'll do something to say, hey, you know, I'm going to be part of this too. But yeah, to just stand there just like, are you done yet? Right. Are you finished? I'm waiting.
Basically, he's annoyed to be there
for me. When you get rid of, you know, your little pet project. But it is cool to hear them change up the leads, because I do enjoy that. You know, with any band, if you've got that, like, especially if it's somebody who their voices are not super different, but it is cool when you have that. Like we were talking about Kiss last week, you know, the Peter Criss songs where it's like, okay, that's a totally different voice.
Right.
Do you want to hear him sing every song? No.
No.
But the one or two on the record, it's a nice change of pace.
I agree. Yeah, no doubt. So I wanted to kind of take that kind of how did you come into Oasis, because that's how I got to Don't Believe the Truth and why it's so big for me. It's kind of my new entry point to Oasis. So Oasis had been there, obviously, for about 10 years. I'm living in Louisville. And one night, you know, I'm out with friends. I think it's like a Saturday night. So I go out with friends, have a couple of pops. I'm driving home midnight-ish. Something like that. And I hear a song on the radio that's really awesome. And I think it's Oasis, but I'm not 100% sure. But I'm like, oh my God, that's an amazing song. What is that? And so I go home, and this is during the heady days of Napster, where you could find anything, and music was basically free. And, you know, I said, give me some Oasis. So I start downloading some stuff to see what it is. And then I start listening. Okay, that's not it. Okay, that's not it. And it was Don't Look Back in Anger. I'm like, wow, that's an awesome song, man. That is so good. You know, what album was that on? Well, that's on What's the Story, Morning Glory. All right, well, give me that whole thing, and then I'll do that. And, of course, it was great. At that point, you could find B-sides. If you say, give me What's the Story, Morning Glory, you can not only get the whole album, but you can get Acquiesce, and you can get Rocking Chair, you can get, you know, all these great B-sides. So I had them on there, too, and I started listening to that back and forth. I'm like, damn, these guys are amazing. Why did I skip over them, right? So I'm like, well, you know, now I'm into them. So I tried to get some more of their downloads, and then eventually, Don't Believe the Truth became the first new Oasis album ever released once I had now discovered them. So it was the first time where I could get excited, like, oh, hey, new Oasis album coming out. Cool. I can't wait to pick it up. I can't wait to see what the new songs are and all that. And you know me, I like to get the deluxe edition anytime we can. They released one. It was on CD, but it was also on DVD audio, which you could flip it over. It was one disc. So CD was on one side. DVD audio was on the other side, which is basically you just play through the DVD player on your stereo. But it also had a cool video, which I think you watched, where it kind of introduced, they're kind of sitting there, the four of them really, talking about how they wrote the songs, how they came together, all that kind of stuff. And it just, the DVD audio, I don't know, I had it through some good speakers, that's for sure. It just sounded so clear to me. It sounded so good. I listened to it over and over. And I don't know, I felt like it was an amazing new album, and I hadn't been hearing much new rock and roll at the time, 2003, 4, 5. Coldplay is one thing, but like, this is more my speed. And I don't know, at that point, I'm like, now I got to go see him play.
Well, that is always cool when you kind of, you turn over this rock somewhere and you say, oh, wait a minute, what is this? I have not heard this before. You were talking about Don't Look Back in Anger. What I always loved about that song was the, and my wife said ripping off the Beatles, but I'm like, no. With the, I mean, it's Imagine is the beginning part of it, the chords, boom, boom, boom. But it's not, then they go into their song. It's not ripping off. It's a tip of the cap. It's the we love you. We're giving you a little shout out there. So I just thought that was cool. And that was, I think that was the first big single that Noel sang. Think
it sounds right to me. Yeah,
and so that was kind of cool. It was like, okay, so this dude, he's got some chops, he can actually sing. But then to look at this album, I'd never heard it before, to be perfectly honest with you. So I said, all right, well, let's jump into this. I jumped into it with the that intro thing, the video that they were talking about, it a little rough, had to watch it more than once. Every other word out of his mouth is a curse word, so that's heavily redacted.
Right.
Gem Archer, good luck with that kid, because he's speaking English, but it's pretty rough. So yeah, I had to watch it a couple times. I love the way Liam talks and the phrases that he comes up with. Like it said that there were some nice little numbers for the ladies on this record. He referred to the other guys in the band as top lads. And I just love that. It's like, I know you're speaking English, but the little phrases are fantastic.
Yeah, I've picked up on some of those over here. You know, it's just, hey, people talk differently all over the world. And people in Maine talk very different from people in Georgia where you live, different from Texas where you've been for the last month, you know, different all over. And, you know, obviously different country, different dialects. You pick this stuff up and Liam certainly lays them on pretty well. I feel like Noel has kind of upped his game as far as eloquence over the years. He realizes, look, I'm really wealthy now. You know, I'm always going to be a guy from Manchester, but I need to speak with a little more eloquence, you know, maybe try to choose my words a little more carefully. Don't have to cuss quite so much. Can expand the vocabulary a little bit. But they both seem to be doing pretty well these days.
There was a great interview with, I think it was The Who. And it wasn't The Who. It was just Roger Daltrey. And the person asked him, I think it was Howard Stern, asked him, hey, you know, I heard Pete Townsend, he called you a geezer. That's got to upset you, right? And Daltrey's like, no, you don't understand. Geezer is, that's a term of endearment. It's a good guy. You're going to love this. He's from around the way. He's a geezer. But it sounds, to us, it sounds like you're making fun of him or something, like an old person or something like that. But no, you don't get it. I would imagine it's pretty cool to be over there and hear these terms. We're like, yeah, I could maybe slide a couple of those into everyday conversations.
Exactly.
To try and fit in a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah. And what, you know, I didn't realize at the time is like they had put together what is, in my opinion, the strongest lineup in the history of Oasis. Having Gem Archer come in and do the second guitar work. But he and Noel do some weaving. They definitely kind of spot off a little bit, especially when Noel's singing. And Gem is a great guitar player. And then Andy Bell they got in. Apparently Andy wasn't even really a bass player. He's more of a guitar player and a keyboard player, but he can sing and he's a good songwriter. So like, okay, you're going to play bass. So he had to learn how to play the bass, and then he had to learn Oasis' stuff on the bass in short order to kind of join the band. And they kind of got their feet wet with Heathen Chemistry, their fifth album, which came out in 2002. And each of them got a songwriting credit on the album, along with Liam. That was the first time that had happened. First four albums, it was always Noel Gallagher. Now, all right, he's loosening the reins on that. He's like, okay, I've got actual talented people. Gigsy and Bonehead were good guys from Manchester, I guess. There had been Liam's buddies in the band before Noel had joined. But now he's like, look, we're up in our game. Apparently he got crossed with both of them. I also think they just weren't quite major league level, and he could get major league guys, and he did.
Well, the big thing for me, I didn't know who Gem Archer was, and I didn't know who Andy Bell was. I mean, they were sitting there talking, but to me, the big thing on this was Zach Starkey.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, you got him on drums. That dude is not a mercenary, but he kind of, like, he's the go-to guy. He was in The Who for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ringo's son automatically gives you pretty big street cred there.
That's right.
But going back to what you were saying about loosening the reins, I heard an interesting thing about the Beatles. The Beatles were obviously the four lads. You had four lead singers and four dudes who could write songs. Now, obviously, you know, John and Paul were the workhorses,
mm-hmm.
but then they were talking about the Beach Boys, and Brian Wilson did everything. Mm-hmm. He was the only person. So who knows? Maybe, you know, at some point in time, Noel's like, I gotta loosen this up a little bit because I'm doing all the heavy lifting. I'm in charge of writing all the songs. Let's see what these guys can do. And to your point, you know, you get some guys in here who are a little better musicians, a little better songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
It makes for a more complex album because, I mean, he doesn't even write all of the songs on this. It isn't like, you know, this person and Noel, or, you know, this person, Noel Gallagher. I mean, there's solo writing credits on this thing. So it makes it sound different, which is cool.
That's right. I mean, if my count is correct, Noel only writes 5 of the 11 songs, like going from absolutely everything, including all the B-sides, for the first decade, basically, that they're around. And now they are on their 6th album, and most of the songs are not written by Noel Gallagher. However, they had 3 singles. Lila, which is a great feel-good song. We'll go through the songs in a minute. The Importance of Being Idle and Let There Be Love. He did write all of those songs. And some of the B-sides, most all of the B-sides as well, right?
Yeah. Well, you figure, too, that, okay, so that don't, let's not get this mixed up. He's still in charge of things.
Right.
So, but the cool part is, like, the first one, Turn Up the Sun by Andy Bell. If you turn that in and he's like, yeah, cool, let's go with this. Obviously, there's no committee there. He approves it and then it goes on the record. So it's got to feel pretty good that it gets past that and
mm-hmm.
on, because I think every person on here has got a writing credit.
Yep, absolutely.
Every member of the band. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, that is funny how, to your point, well, you know, there's songs on the records, and then there's the singles, which will be my songs. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes. But no, I thought it was great. What was interesting to me in the documentary is you could see that Dave Sardi saying, like, this has been cobbled together. It's not like they went off someplace, they had all these songs, they worked it up. They got to do gigs in France. All right, so then they'll book a little studio time here and do it there. Then they're going to go back to England. Then they're going to go to the second studio. Then they're going to, you know, wherever they are, they're just cobbling this thing together from pieces everywhere, you know. Because usually a solid album like that, it doesn't, you might be in a couple different places, or you might work, mix it in one place and do recording elsewhere. It just seems like they usually get in one place and get it done. Whereas this, it seems like they were never in the same place for a week or for 5 days, but still they kept carrying the tapes or carrying the files around with them, and they put together something. I think it's their best album since What's the Story, Morning Glory. I did not care for Standing on the Shoulders of Giants much, and I think that the band was falling apart at, you know, in some ways at that time. Heathen Chemistry was their next step forward, but it wasn't quite there yet. Every album has a few songs for me. Out of the 7, you know, it's this one. It's Don't Believe the Truth and What's the Story, Morning Glory. Those are the 2 Oasis records that I go to when I want to hear Oasis.
Well, it's interesting too that you were talking about how they kind of cobbled this thing together. There really is no recipe for success here, because I mean, there have been great albums where they've had all the music written, they go in and just record it, it's fairly easy. there have been great albums where they kind of don't really have anything, and then they go to the studio and find some stuff. And then there's stuff like this where you just take bits and pieces and you just make it work. So I think that probably comes back to, you know, the team that you put together and the producer and everything like that, you know, how much heavy lifting they're going to do to come up with the final product, these 11 songs in this order and sounding all the same. They just made it work. You just make it work.
Well, I mean, Zach Starkey is the best drummer they'd had, you know, certainly on any of their albums. He's top notch. You know, I've seen him with The Who. I've seen him with Oasis. We'll get to that. But he's awesome. And they finally had him. And of course, they put him in the videos. As if you've got Ringo's son, might as well put him in the video.
Oh, sure. You know, I think it's kind of strange that they don't. And I don't know what the situation was, that he's not really part of the band. I mean, he's on the record. They credit him. But I mean, he's not. He was a gun for hire on that, on those deals.
Right. And he wasn't really in the band on the next album, really. Or he certainly didn't tour on the next tour. But maybe The Who were back together at that point. I don't know. He's certainly in demand and could take whatever's best for him. I bet it was fun for a while for him because he is such a studio musician. Yeah, he's played big gigs. You play in The Who, you play big gigs, but you're playing to old people. If you were playing Oasis, you know, there'll be a young crowd, there'll be a different energy. And while they may not still be in their heyday in 2005 and 6 like they were in 94, 95, 96, and 97 in there, it would still, I think, be a lot of fun to do an Oasis tour, man.
Yeah, there would be more of a, it would be more of a rock star tour. You're right. The Who is going to, yeah, they're going to sell tickets, but yeah, there's going to be a lot of people sitting down at the Who shows these days. And yeah, it's just a younger, more energetic deal. And again, he can do whatever he wants at this point in time. It's pretty cool, that story about how if you didn't know who he was at all, you say, okay, this guy's pretty good, a pretty good drummer, pretty good musician. Mm-hmm. And then to know that he is the son of Ringo Starr, because you figure how many people that were the son of somebody else, they were like, yeah, they never really, they did some stuff. They pretended to be a thing, but they never really were. It never lived up to the hype. This guy definitely is the latter of the two. He's standing on his own. He's a great musician.
Well, that's right, you know. And then Gem Archer, you know, who I guess was on Creation Records, his band was on the same label, and that's how Noel had known him. And he basically just told him he wanted to be in the band in a big way. And he's coming down and recording with him. And I think everybody's like, am I going to be in the band? What does Liam think? And Noel's like, it's my f***ing band. I'll decide who's in it, who isn't. You know, so he already sent Bonehead off. So it's like, all right, you're in. And of course, Gem, who, look, after Oasis broke up, basically everybody who is in Oasis who wasn't Noel Gallagher went on to form BDI, and they made a couple of records. That's Gem and Andy and Liam, and I think Chris Sherrick, who had been their touring drummer after Zach left. They all kind of went and did BDI. BDI had some really good songs, but, you know, Noel went off to his High Flying Birds once BDI pretty well fell apart. Gem came back and is now a member of the High Flying Birds, and Noel welcomed him back, and I've seen him play now with the Birds, so they're still on good terms. But having Andy and Gem in there, who can write songs, who are creative artists in their own right, they can contribute. They can contribute stuff on different instruments. The harmonica on, is it Mucky Fingers? Is Gem with Noel going, give me more, give me, and he's just wailing on it, you know? So you put enough talent around, not just my old mates from back in Manchester, but let's get the real talent here, and it can bring out all this amazing music.
Yeah, I think it was interesting that, like you said, when they broke up, they pretty much all went to BDI except for Noel.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I guess, you know, you got to pick in the divorce, you got to pick mom or dad. So,
well, you know, look, I mean, Noel can obviously write all of his own songs. He can sing too. Liam needs songwriters, needs a band. So let's just keep the band together and we'll share more songwriting. We don't need what's his name anymore. But, you know, and the first album that, you know, they played the Olympics. I mean, you know, they did some big gigs, good songs, but it's not quite the same. And I would take the Birds over BDI personally, but we're not here to get way into that. Let's get into the album a little bit. Please check out this word from our sponsors.
Oh, wait, we don't have any sponsors.
Well, just listen to me farting on a snare drum. We'll kind of go track by track here. Start off with Turn Up the Sun and Andy Bell, right? Great way to open an album. I mean, strong, powerful, pounding, but still Turn Up the Sun, that's upbeat.
Yeah, I liked it. You're right. It's a good track to start the record with. I think that it's interesting that, it's an Andy Bell only written song, so it's going to sound a little different. It doesn't sound like it's not Oasis, but it also kind of sounds a little different, which I think is interesting, loosening up the reins a little bit. But it's a good track on its own.
I agree. No, it stands up on its own. It's kind of the ringing guitar at the beginning of the end. It's not exactly what Oasis is known for. More the big, fatter chords. But it turns out great. And it was a great way to open the show, too. Now, I think they should always open the show with Hello off What's the Story, Morning Glory. I think that's a killer way, killer big track with big old riffs. Gets people going. You're saying hello. But, you know, Turn Up the Sun was a great way to open the show. I'm glad I saw him do it. Now, then they go into Mucky Fingers, which is more of a straight up brum, 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 kind of in your face a little bit. But again, great lyrics by Gallagher. I mean, he doesn't just come up with the right music, the right tunes, the right chord progression. He can put a lot of good, I don't know, he can put you in the right frame of mind in just a phrase or two, it seems. He can create a world briefly with his words. His lyrics are underrated, in my opinion. And this isn't like a real deep song. You get your mucky fingers burned. You get the truth from the lies you were learned. But it's still smart in a lot of ways. I don't know. I just think he's sharp.
Yeah, I think he is, again, going back to the whole, they were, you know, popular kind of on pop radio. I don't think he gets enough credit as being a songwriter. The turn of the phrase. Yeah, this is not a man. But then again, they don't all have to be
right.
So, but it is. I like the song, and it is. The more time that you listen to it, you kind of appreciate it more.
Yeah, I agree. And it's in your face. I mean, you can't say it's not a rocker. You can't say they've gone too soft if they're doing this song.
Right.
And the great harmonica in the middle, it's better than a wailing guitar, man. I think it fits it perfectly.
And I don't think, I don't really remember too many harmonica parts on Oasis song. So that's kind of a cool change of pace. Also, you're throwing something else in. It's not that it doesn't fit. It's kind of new. It's different. It makes the song stand out from the others.
Yeah, and it sounds like a train when he's wailing at the end there.
Yeah.
A little chug on it. I love it. Good, another killer one, man. And then they get to the big single, the big first single, Lila, which is a sing-along Oasis song if ever there was one, right?
I had never heard this song before, and the first line of it, calling out, I'm like, that's Street Fighting Man. I thought they were going to cover that. In the song, okay, that's like Don't Look Back in Anger. That's a tip of the cap to the Stones. We love you. Here's something that sounds quite a bit like it to pay homage to the boys. I think
that's anyway. Interesting.
If you told me it wasn't, there's no way that you did that on purpose.
I'd never, and as many times as I've heard that track by the Stones, I never put those two together. Action. So that is interesting. Good to, I've never heard that. Here's the thing. Noel will often be like, I was listening to The Doors when I was doing it. Like, yeah, because you ripped off 5-1. I can hear it in the song, man. It's obvious. You know, it boom, boom, boom. Yeah, I know what you're doing, you know. But that's one that kind of slipped past me. So I'm not sure if you're right or wrong, but that's a good call by you.
Interesting. And the first couple, it sounds like on this record, they got... There is some Beatles stuff on here, but I got a lot of the Kinks too. Not anything like Lila, like that, not that straight ahead, but just kind of like that, you know, the Sunday Afternoon song by the Kinks.
Oh yeah.
Like kind of like that cool like vibe to it. So yeah, but like I said, I thought he was covering Street Fighting Man on that first line from Lila. Gotcha. And then it was, you know, calling out. Oh, and okay, this is your own song, but that's cool. Yeah, no, but this one's the get people up, the crowd sing along.
That's right. Yeah. Put the big lights on, flash Lila, you know, on each one. Eyeball Tickler, though, was the B-side by Gem Archer. So Gem got a little bit of play there, and it's not a bad song. It's a it's definitely a B-side, if you ask me. But then you know, they also have Won't Let You Down as a Liam song that was part of the digital download or part of the CD single, you know. And then I guess in the UK DVD, There was Can You See It Now, which was, I think it was a Nolan. It's basically an instrumental. Okay. I think at the end you say, can you see it now? I can see it now. Can you see it now? But, you know, it's basically an instrumental. But, you know, I think it did pretty well for them. Went to number one in the UK. That's a big deal. You know, got into the top 10 all over Europe. Sold, you know, hundreds of thousands. So, and they had a video shoot where there's a girl who's kind of in a tough relationship. She's in black and white. Then she breaks down the walls, and now she's the belle of the ball with the boys playing, you know, in a big tent. But now that you say that it was Street Fighting Man, they made the tent up. They wanted it to look like the Stones Rock and Roll Circus.
Like the Rock and Roll Circus, that's
so
right.
So maybe there's a little bit more to Jackson than meets the eye there, folks. Maybe he's the smart one of the Gallaghers. He's the smart Gallagher. He's Action Gallagher. All right, so yeah, big hit. Nice song. Then they slow it back down a little bit, like Love Like a Bomb, which Liam and Gem wrote together. Kind of a short one, not even 3 minutes long. And it's got, you know, it's pretty acoustic. Kind of got an acoustic chug to it. You know, folky. And then it's got it's almost like a sitar-y kind of lead guitar over it, would you say?
Yeah, and I think Andy was saying something about how when Liam can play the guitar, but it's like he's playing the guitar like he's trying to saw it in half.
Right.
Like he just attacks the thing and kind of makes it up as he goes along, which is kind of cool. I like this song. You know, it's Liam and Gem writing on their own.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. You know, it is short, but you know, it's kind of, I think it could have been a single off the record. It's got a catchy hook to it. You know, bum, 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 bum.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Gem has good lyrics, you know, he's solid and Liam delivers them well. So blowing my mind, you know, but it's, you know, so it's got a little psychedelia still in it, maybe with between the blowing my mind and the guitar part. I think it's well done. And then you get to The Importance of Being Idle. To me, this could be the high water mark of Noel Gallagher's career. And I love his stuff with High Flying Birds, everything that came after. I love Morning Glory and all this stuff. This could be the best song he's ever done. And I think he knows it too.
Okay. Interesting. To me, this one sounded like the Kinks. Yeah, no, this is a great song. And yeah, written by himself. I don't think he's got, let's see.
He doesn't write with other people, generally speaking.
Yeah.
It's all him.
Yeah, he writes. No, yeah, I like this song. It is cool. This one stood out to me also as it's a nice change of pace. It's not like Love Like a Bomb, mm-hmm. So we're changing gears again, which is cool on the record. I like when you do that. You kind of mix it up a little bit.
I'm with you, and it's acoustic, but it's very stark acoustic. It's almost like a march of an acoustic, and the way he kind of does that falsetto voice.
Yeah.
It gets up high and down like wow. And but the thing is, in that video, you see him say, so I'm listening back to it, and it's not that I was surprised that I could do it because I could hit that falsetto. It was just I was surprised, like, wow, that's really good. I'm really awesome. I'm like, yeah, you're still so full of yourself. Both of you are at this point. It's unbelievable. But it is actually pretty darn good, and he hasn't not sung it in concert since, right?
Who wants to hear a great song by me? It was kind of a cool change of pace too with his vocal delivery, because I had not heard him sing like that before. So that was pretty cool. You know, you kind of expand the boundaries of what you can do. Yeah, I mean, it's a good song, but you know, you could be a little humble, maybe.
Yeah, right. What I thought was good was it's basically The Importance of Being Idle, which is basically like sitting around and doing nothing's the greatest job in the world. And you listen to the lyrics, how he doesn't do too much. People expect more of him, but they're barking up the wrong tree. I'd never seen the video before until we decided to do the show. And Reese Ifans, who's probably best known as being Hugh Grant's goofy roommate in Notting Hill, who walks out to the reporters, you know, and he's been in all sorts of stuff. I mean, he was the great DJ on Pirate Radio, or it's actually called The Boat Who Rocked over here. I'm not really sure why. He's been in so many movies. He's a great actor, but that's probably where the world knows him best.
No, I know him best from, what was that movie with Keanu Reeves?
Yeah, where they were the football movie.
The football team.
Yeah.
And he's like, I thought you said he was all muscle. He's smoking a cigarette. I'm wiry. He's wiry.
Beat it, Limey. I'm bloody Welsh. Whatever. Such a good movie. I don't even recall the name. I can't believe they got Gene Hackman. That kind of sullies his whole career, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, no, the movie was stupid. I just love that. I just love that the walk-in where he's going to be the kicker on a professional football team, and he's smoking while he's walking in there. Yes,
fantastic. That's it. The B-side, Pass Me Down the Wine, is actually, I think it's the best of all the B-sides that I've heard off this album. Of course, they have six or seven, as they are wont to do. Could have been on the album. All the others to me are B-sides. You know, they're just not quite thought out all the way. You know, they're not quite 100% songs. They're like, well, I know it's going to be a B-side, so let me just get it to this point, and then we'll put it out. But to me, Pass Me Down the Wine is good. And then The Quiet Ones, another Gem Archer. I mean, good for him. You know, he may not be writing the singles, but his B-sides are getting on the singles, right? So, you know, excellent, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, to have your stuff included. And I think over there, even though they're B-sides, they get a lot more attention than they do in the United States. If it's a B-side in the United States, forget it. You're never going to hear
it. Never going to hear it, no. No, but you might hear it somewhere on some radio around here. Absolutely. And so I think that kind of, obviously this is a CD, but to me that wraps up kind of part one, maybe not side one, but part one of the record.
Okay. So,
okay, that's big time. Moving on to The Meaning of Soul. Here's a little Liam song that's right up in your face. Boom, chaka, 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 boom, chaka. It's like a little train coming at you. And then Zach's got those drums, boom, 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 in the middle. It's not even 2 minutes long. It's about the shortest song recorded in the last 30 years.
And the cool part about this was, and this was from the video, I guess he was a big, I don't know if it was Noah or was Zach, was a big fan of DJ Fontana, who was the drummer for Elvis. And they showed him record. They showed Starkey recording it, and he's got a Wheaties box on the stair, and he's beating the Wheaties box with, I think, wooden spoons to get that real, like that flat thump 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 thump.
Ah,
that's pretty cool.
That is cool.
Stuff like that. I don't know. I would have never guessed that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that much about playing the drums. But to think about that, no, it's not sounding right. What else can we do? Okay, no, I need flatter. Okay, what do you got? Cereal box. Okay,
yeah,
let's try it. That was pretty cool. I like that. And now that I know that, when I hear it, I think of him beating on the Wheaties box with the wooden spoon.
Well, it's fair enough, you know. But straight ahead rocker, it fits in well on the album. I mean, we're more than halfway through here, and there's no clunkers yet. All pretty darn good songs. Now the next one, Guess God Thinks I'm Able, is another Liam. It's kind of the last Liam write on the record, and it's got some nice guitar on it, but it's not my favorite. I'll say it that way.
It's okay. It's kind of one that, you know, I wouldn't skip through it if I was listening to the album. But yeah, not one of my favorites either.
And it's a little Beatlesque, you know, some of the chorus and stuff like that. It's not a bad song. I would not call it a clunker. But you know, it's kind of like, yeah, okay, yeah, not bad. What else you got? And then next part of the cue. Now, see, I think this is a brilliant song. It's a brilliant Noel Wright part of the cue.
I think that's the best song on the record, in my opinion.
You think so?
It's a real hard left turn. It's nasty. And it's just about, you know, you just get that, like, you're living in this big city, but you're invisible. Like, you've just kind of lost your way. There's nothing for you. You don't know who you are or where you're going. And it's just the whole thing is just disgusting. And I love it.
It is, right? Yeah. And it's kind of a coming of age, like, you know, how did I get here? I can't believe I'm not going to die like this, am I? You know, it, kind of looking back on what his life could have been if he hadn't taken the rock and roll turn, right?
Yeah. And to think that, I mean, again, you're part of this thing. You live with a million people, but like if you disappeared tomorrow, would anybody really miss you or know that you were gone?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're just a cog in this giant wheel, and that it kind of gets weighs on you after a while. Who am I? What am I doing here?
Right.
Where
Every
do I fit
day
in?
Is the same. You know, I'm clocking at the same job. I'm buying groceries at the same supermarkets. Like, what am I doing, man?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's dark and it's cold too. And the way that England, the way that London is a dark, cold place for most of the year. And it just kind of
Manchester's worse. Manchester's worse. It's just a little further north. It's just a little less sun, just a little colder during the wintertime, no doubt about it. You know. Now, they used this song in the movie North Country, which was a Charlize Theron movie. I think it's based on a true story about a woman, you know, who worked in a coal mine and had to battle, you know, sexism and, you know, the way things were in the country back then. And I seem to remember it being like in a TV ad on the TV. I'm like, I heard the song, like, oh, that's Oasis. I'm like, well, now I got to go see that movie. You know, and it had Woody Harrelson and Sean Bean, who I really like in it. And then what's her name? Frances McDormand, who just won yet another Oscar. She won three now? She won three Oscars?
She could have. Yeah, she's pretty good at what
she's
she does.
Pretty big time, yeah. So, I don't recall it being in the movie. I remember it being in the ads. I'm sure it probably was in the movie. I just don't recall. They probably didn't use it that much. But I agree. I mean, I don't know if I agree with you. It's the best song on the album. I think it's awesome. I think it's one of Noel's better works, and it's why he only needs five songs on the album if they're all the singles plus that and Mucky Fingers. My God, man, he's done his job.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, it's a nice change of pace. It doesn't sound like anything else on the record. And so it's a little harder and it's a little more raw. And that's why I like it.
I like it too. And then next is Keep the Dream Alive. It's Andy Bell's second contribution to the album. And it's a little, I guess it's a little psychedelic. It's kind of a 60-ish throwback thing. It's a little long for me. It is the longest song on the album, and it seems like it drags. And I don't think it drags. It's just kind of like, yeah, I've kind of been here. I've heard that same distorted guitar for a while. I don't know. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. It's not my favorite song, but yeah, it fits in with the rest of it. But
it fits.
I listen to it because I'm listening to the whole record.
Right, yeah. Not a bad song. It does fit in with everything they were doing, but it's too long. It can be cut short. We can cut some of that out of there, I feel like. We can find it somewhere. But next, A Bell Will Ring, the only Gem Archer, you know, solo song, right? Because he did Love Like a Bomb with Liam. Bell Will Ring, positive song. Liam delivers it pretty well. Andy Bell said it was his favorite lyrics on the whole record.
They were talking too about how, I mean, a bell will ring. What does that mean? Does that mean you get hit in the head and, you know, the bell ring? Or is it Andy calling you? The bell will ring. I just thought that was funny. And it was funny too that it was not written by Andy Bell. It was written by Gem. So it's just an interesting turn of phrase.
Well, you know, something will go off your head and, you know, you will realize what you have to do with your life. Or that song will come to you. Suddenly, a bell will ring and it'll all fit together, right? And apparently, also from the video, it was Ringo's favorite song on the record.
Okay.
Of course, he got to hear it before maybe the rest of us did. If he really wanted to, he would have that kind of access. But Gem's like, it's Ringo's favorite, which, look, if you find out that one of the Beatles likes your song the best on a record, while, you know, that his kid's playing on and that Noel Gallagher's writing songs on and he likes yours the best, that's a pretty big charge, man.
Yeah, and to me, this sounded a lot like Revolver, too. You know, just kind of that Revolver era for the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you're right. If Ringo likes it, that's kind of your, you know, little, I know you wrote most of the songs on the record. I know I'm just the one of the dudes, but Ringo liked my song best.
He liked mine best. About that. So take that. Yeah. And then it ends up with the last single, Let There Be Love, which is very Beatles-esque. And they do share the lead singing here. You know, there's Liam starts off and then Noel comes in later. It is obviously a very pretty kind of symphonic song. This song had been around for a little while, though. Like I said, this was kind of the heady days of Napster, and I had gotten myself a digital copy of a demo that was just Noel and his acoustic guitar, and it was faster. It was more like Lila than it was Let There Be Love.
I like this song. It's okay to me. The high point is the double lead on there, because it's cool to hear their voices go back and forth. They're not totally different. They have a lot of similarities, but you can also tell the difference. And this is what makes the song for me.
Fair enough. Yeah, and they stretch it out a little bit, and they put some piano and stuff like that on it to make it kind of radio friendly and all that. But it's a lovely song. It really is. At the end of the day, it was going to be more of a rocker, I think, originally. He's like, no, that's not quite right. I'll just keep that in the vault until I can figure that one out.
That is pretty cool when you hear that. You hear other, you know, the original version of it, and you know, you wrote it you liked it, but you said, I like it, but it's missing something. Mm-hmm. Something is wrong with this, or something needs a little more polishing. And then to hear it in its final version is pretty cool. Okay, this is, then you mess with it a little bit. Okay, here's what it needed to be. I got it now.
Right, right. And I don't know if that was all him or if it was working with Dave Sardi, who produced the record, and he went on to produce the next record and the first Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds record. And now he's worked with all sorts of stuff. I mean, all sorts of people, including, you know, The Who and the Rolling Stones and Nine Inch Nails, and just an incredible who's who of rock and roll, while still doing some smaller ones. But then he also did, you know, some music scores like Zombieland and Ghost Rider and that movie 21 about the kids from MIT who went to Vegas and were so awesome at blackjack. You know, they basically counted cards to become pretty wealthy, you know. So the guy's had a pretty long career, and I feel like he had a pretty good relationship with Noel at that point to be able to crank all this out. And in so many different places. It's not like we're going to the country for 3 months, we're going to crank this out together. No, you know, he's chasing them all over Europe and the world.
Yeah, and it's a nice way to end the record too, kind of a nice little send-off.
It is. It is. And, you know, Oasis records were never all that long. And, in this day and age, you expect to maybe get an hour's worth of music on a CD. It's you know, 55 to 65 minutes is kind of what you expect. But, you know, 42 and a half, you know, 43 minutes, that's what you get. That's it. You know there's going to be B-sides. And there was another one, I think, another Noel sitting here in silence on my own. Yeah, another two-minute, one of the small B-sides. There's not much to it. Again, I think it was just kind of half of a song, or it's just an acoustic thing. But at any rate, there's always going to be a little bit more that you can dig into. But they're like, nope, this is it. We're not going to give you 14 songs. You get this. Here's the 11 songs.
Yeah.
What's the Story? Morning Glory was basically only 10 songs. I mean, there's a couple of, you know, less than 1 minute kind of go-betweens between songs there. But there's only 10 songs, and six of those were singles. So, you know, why put out an hour-long album when the kids will buy the 40-minute version? And you're going to have big songs anyway. So, yeah. So after I heard this, I'm like, oh, my God. And I listened to it, Jackson, over and over and over in 2005 and 2006. It was my go-to. Went to it over and over. So when they toured, I had to go see them. And I'm so glad that I did.
And that's always the wild card, too, with something like this. Especially for these guys, like, you know, you put the record out. Okay, show's coming up. Is everybody going to be there? Are they going to be happy together tonight? What am I going to get out of this? Right. So I'm glad that you had a positive experience with your show.
Well, it was great. You know, we saw them near Cleveland, Cuyahoga Falls. It was a big amphitheater, and we didn't have the best seats in the world, but we're kind of in the middle, you know, and underneath, not on the lawn, but had actual seats. And they played, they played more than half of the new record. I mean, that's the thing. It's great when you go see a band and you love all their old stuff and you're like, okay, we're going to have to sit through four, five, six new songs. But when you go see a band and like their new album you love and it's awesome and it's their best in years, like you can't wait to go see those songs fit in with all the old classics, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly the way it was. And, you know, how old was I then? I was in my early 30s. And then I saw some older people there, but then we sat next to some like high school girls, you know, who were dancing and singing the whole time, you know. So it's like, yeah, it was good to see, like, not just because let's face it, most of the bands I'm seeing at that point are older bands, and I'm the young guy there in my early 30s, right? Mostly people in their 50s and 60s and stuff like that. But to go see a band, a rock band, and I think Airborne were opening for them, and they were awesome. You know, they had just come out with their first album, I think. So I was like, yeah, man, a cool young rock band with a young crowd who's going to be up for it. And it was packed. And they, you know, and they played big hits. They played the new songs. It was great, man. I was like, damn, that's great. When they come back again, I'm going to see them again. And I did. So the thing is, the next time around, they played theaters. They didn't play big amphitheaters where you could play to 10, 12, 15, 20,000 people. They're playing like 2,000 seaters. And so I went to see them, you know, at the Taft in Cincinnati and at the Marat in Indianapolis. I think I was supposed to go see them again. Somebody got me tickets, got me the promoter or whoever down there, tickets to see them at the Ryman. And I was going to go again, which would have been awesome. But it was like the next day I had to participate in a funeral. Like I had to be a pallbearer. And I wasn't going to be able to take the She-Wolf, who got a discount at the hotel right across the street. So it was going to be prohibitively expensive for me to go. So I was going to have to drive home that night. So I have to drive 3 hours home. If it's 1.5 hours, that's one thing. But it's 3 hours and I lose an hour going from Central Time back to Eastern. So you're talking about getting home at 3 in the morning. I'm like, yeah, I just seen him twice. Do I really need to see him a third time? And technically, I've already seen him 3 times. So I'm like, do I really need to see him again? No, don't risk, you know, having 5 pallbearers because of you, right?
Yeah.
Just go ahead and skip it. But I mean, to me, that was an amazing tour. And I think the tour did really well. The next album, Dig Out Your Soul, which of course I was excited about as well, really kind of missed the mark for me. It's just kind of surprising to me. It's like, really? You know, like you do one that's so good. You've got this band back together again. You know, you got these great songwriters. And it was just kind of, to me.
Yeah, and that's too bad because you know you can't. You listen to this record, you know you can do it. You know you've got the talent. You know you've got the musicianship. And then, yeah, to have something that kind of sputters out. And that was the last one, wasn't it?
Yeah, see, that was the last one. And they did some touring on that. And then Noel and Liam were at each other's throats. Finally, he's like, nah, that's it. I've had enough. That's it. I'm gone. I'm leaving. Noel's taking his ball and he's going home. You know, and I think he's done great work. Now, Liam's done 2 BDI albums and now 2 solo records. And there's definitely good stuff on there. But he doesn't quite have what Noel has. And he doesn't have the songwriting ability and all the people around him, it would seem to me.
And I know stranger things have happened, and so I don't want to say never, but I mean, I heard an interview with Liam, and it was probably 2019, and the interviewer kind of broached the subject of Oasis, and at that point in time, there just didn't seem like there was any way they were going to see eye to eye again. Just not.
They have not spoken since that night in Paris. Since they had the row that broke up the band. They have not spoken. Now, from what I understand, Liam has kind of gently reached out a couple of times. And Noel has still got, he wants nothing to do with him. Noel is insanely rich. Noel is wealthy. Noel, you know, lives in a mansion and has a chauffeur. Can't drive. But he has a chauffeur and several cars, you know. He's remarried again. You know, he has kids in school. He's making great solo records. He gets to work with whomever he wants. He doesn't need Liam. It would shock me. I mean, I always say give people enough time. Eventually, the dollar signs are going to be big enough. And eventually, it will happen. I don't know about this one. And, you know, they love Johnny Marr and the Smiths. Johnny Marr's never bowed to that pressure or bowed to it, I guess. You know, now, of course, part of it's Morrissey. And Morrissey probably doesn't need the Smiths either. But, you know, they've never done it. And I don't think that's ever going to happen. So I don't know. They're still relatively young. They're just in their 50s, early to mid 50s. Maybe they get in their 60s and mellow. And they say, all right, well, let's just do one more, rake in all that money. And then we never have to see each other ever again. People will stop asking you about it finally after 20 years or whatever it'll be at that point. But
and with something like that, they probably wouldn't even have to put out a new record. They could, if that much time, because you don't really care at that point anyway. You're just looking for the hits. But just to think about how big this band was for the people in the UK, kind of the voice of the generation, and to have them not even speaking to each other and their family, it's just kind of sad to me because what was it that was really that bad? I mean, you know, you had your differences, but what was it really that you would never talk to your brother again? That's insane to me.
You know, but when they're sharing a room and your brother broke your favorite record or he sold your favorite toy, or it all builds up. You know, in all these little straws, you know, and eventually it's like, did I ever get out of that 2-bed bedroom? Did I ever get out of it? Well, he knows he's out of it now. He knows he's out of it now.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing too. You know, like you said, I live in this giant mansion. I have a zillion dollars in the bank. I do whatever I want to do. Why would I want to put up with that crap? Because you know that's what's going to happen. You know it's going to be kissy lovey for the first 10 minutes and then it's, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, now I remember what an ass you are. And I don't want to hang out with you at all, you know. But see, they have kids. So it's like you don't see your nephews. You don't have anything to do with them, you know. I mean, that's a little weak sauce to me. You know,
yeah, I agree. At some point in time, you have to, for the good of everybody else, you kind of have to put your differences aside. Okay, listen, yeah, you bent me out of shape when you did A, B, and C, but that was a million years ago. Mm-hmm. Water under the bridge. Let's, you know, take what we have moving forward and do something together. Repair the damage. Get the families together. Yeah, that to me, that's sad.
Yeah, I mean, you divorce wives, you don't divorce children. You can break off an adult relationship, but, you know, there's kids that need you in their lives. So that's a little weak to me. But, you know, it's easy for me to say, I guess. It's not my relationship. but, you know, the thing is, I think Liam just ran right into BDI. And then when BDI broke up, I think he was like, okay, now what? And I think now he does have a good manager, has a good relationship, has some better people around him. He doesn't have so much alcohol in his life, because I feel like that's what fuels a lot of this stuff with the Gallaghers, is the booze. Get some in them and suddenly they don't have a filter, nor do they have any fear, and they're ready to fight. And, you know, I think he's got that under control. He's got his relationship with his kids are in better spots now, because he has kind of not such a jerk, and they're older, and he's kind of repaired stuff enough with their mothers that he can kind of move on from some of that stuff. And it seems like Liam is in a better place now. So let's see how Liam can do on his own for a little while. Because Noel's good to go, man. His band, Birds, are great. You know, he's basically got half of Oasis. I mean, the guy who played keyboard used to play in Oasis. Gemb is from Oasis. You know, I mean, he's doing just fine. And I can't wait for his new stuff to come out. He's still doing the same thing where he has B-sides. And he released three great albums. He also released three great EPs on vinyl only, which, you know, annoyed me. But, you know, I could get it on vinyl and digital download. So I'm like, all right, well, give me that. And then at least I can listen to it on the phone. So, and then he put out a Greatest Hits album, Volume 1. So he's doing his thing. I don't think we're going to see any more Oasis. And maybe that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, you'd rather have nothing than something that was horrible. Mm-hmm. If they put out a record that was just didn't work. Yeah, you'd always leave them wanting more. They shouldn't have done that. Oh, you know, one too many. So yeah, I don't think they may get back together someday and do something. I mean, the Black Crowes did, and they mm-hmm. couldn't stand each other for a long time.
That's right.
But I don't think you're going to see a new Oasis record.
Yeah, Noel jokes about it. You know, it's like, as soon as the money's right, 50 million quid, Jeff, sign me up. Why not? You know, get my own plane off to see the guy, you know, except for the 2 hours on stage. You know, I get
right.
it. So, you know, and that's just fine. But I mean, it was just, I know it didn't have the cultural impact, because what's the story Morning Glory sound like? I don't know, 25, 30 million copies, something crazy all over the world. Don't Believe the Truth is more like 6 million, which is, you know, not bad, especially at that time when so many things were being Napsterized and just kind of taken.
Yeah.
It went triple platinum in Britain, which is still a big deal. Nearly a million sold there. A couple hundred thousand in America. Obviously, it missed out. But then at that time in America, who was selling albums? Was anybody? I mean, I don't feel like anybody was. And I think Oasis was just kind of like, that's not new. And everything had to be brand new at that time between Napster stealing and just the music industry going, okay, now that music's free, the only way we can make money is we can't take a bet on a band, you know, and try to keep them together and figure out who the solo or the songwriters are. Let's just get someone who looks good. We'll hire a choreographer. We'll call our singer. We'll hire musicians. We'll hire a producer. And we'll just push them out until the public can't stand them, whether it's a boy band or it's a, you know, a female singer, whoever it is, will create these things, because bands are too expensive. Especially, we can't have them not hit. We can't have their right. third or fourth record then be somewhat of a hit. They got to be a hit right out of the gate. I think that's just the way music went. Especially, I think Napster pushed it further that way. Like,
correct.
All of a sudden, you can't make money on records. You can't support a band who isn't successful right out of the gate.
Yeah, which is too bad, because, you know, we could spend a whole other show on the, you know, the band that they put out a couple records and then, you know, the third or the fourth one, that was the one where they really took off. And you're right, in that dynamic, you're never going to get three or four. You're going to get one, maybe. And if that doesn't work out, we're moving on.
And I wonder, you know, Don't Believe the Truth, it was kind of in reaction to like those early Bush years, right? The conservatives is like, now, God, can we even believe what we see on TV? Which is kind of prescient considering what happened about 12 years later with the new regimes. Like, wow, the truth really doesn't have anything to do with what they have to say anymore. It doesn't even really matter. They don't even try to dress it up in the truth. If I say it, it's true. Like, wow, you know, they were onto something there.
Yeah, we have. We've come a long way since the, you know, the days when you believe things were, you know, if it was in the paper, it was true. Yeah, mm-hmm. If I don't like it, it doesn't paint me in a good light. Nah, it's made up.
We want to do this show to talk about stuff we love. And if we wanted to gain big listeners, we would probably just do, you know, diamond selling records all the time. But to me, the part is I want to share what I like. And the fact that you've never really listened to this album, like, well, that's a travesty, because if we'd lived together in 2005 and 2006, you would have heard this a bunch, and you would have gone to see them play it, you know? So that's why I thought it'd be a good idea to do a show on this one. Because
that's what I love, because, I mean, at this point in time, the stuff that I love, I've listened to a million times. So it's cool to get something new. It's like, if you like this, you're going to love this. Interesting. Okay. I didn't even know they made this record. I had never heard of it before. Exactly. And so, I mean, again, Oasis was, 95, 97 in there. And then in the 2000s, they were still around, maybe?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, definitely a good recommendation.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I mean, you know, that's the thing. I mean, 200,000 sold in America versus 6 million for What's the Story, Morning Glory. And it's basically the same, you know, triple platinum versus 15 platinum in the UK. But, you know, people know that record. And I think more people ought to know this one, because to me, it was the zenith of the talent in the band. It was their best latter day album. It was certainly the best of the last 10 years of their career. And, you know, I just think more, I was so into it. I'm like, I don't know why this isn't more popular, but I think more people ought to like it.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. And who knows, maybe, you know, if you listen to this, you could say, I'll give it a whirl, and I think you will be pleasantly surprised.
So that's our take on Oasis's Don't Believe the Truth. A great album with an incredible lineup that had some fantastic hits, some songs that are still done by Noel Gallagher to this day and the other guys while they're out there touring. Just one I remember very fondly at an important time in my life where I was looking for good new rock and roll, and Oasis really delivered here in a big way. After I'd found them, even though I ignored them through the heyday of their career, I'm really glad I came across them, and I'm really glad they released this in 2005 so I could not only get to know this album, play it 1,000 times and love it, but then get to go see them a few times before they imploded. And what are the odds we ever see them again? I don't know. Everyone says time cures all wounds, and eventually the money will be big enough that they'll all want to get back together. But in this case, I'm not so sure. I may have already seen Oasis the last time I'm ever going to see them. And maybe that's okay, because I saw them on a great tour supporting a great album. Next week, we're going to go back to the Iron Maiden well. The new video and song, Writing on the Wall, has really inspired us to go back into the catalog. And in watching the video, it kind of reminded us of the Somewhere in Time cover. And so it inspired us to go back and listen to it a few times. So next week, our episode number 38 will be all about Somewhere in Time record. Until then, did we get something right? Did we get something wrong? Did we miss the point? You have to let us know. Reach out to us on Twitter at @ugly_werewolf or at @ActionJack72. Make sure you download and subscribe all past episodes. You can get them anywhere, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts. You can also get them at www.uglyamericanwerewolf.libsyn.com. Until next week, rock and roll fans all over the world, be cool and stay safe.
Maryland sports fans, there's only one sports book in the great state of Maryland with over 50 years experience booking bets and supporting customers. Betfred Sportsbook at Long Shots is now open and is the only sports book in Frederick offering cash betting on football, basketball, world soccer, and more. Visit the Betfred Sportsbook at I-270 and MD-85 in Frederick, right next to Long Shots off-track betting. Go to BetfredSports.com for more information and your chance to win exclusive merchandise. Must be 21 or older. Play responsibly. For help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.